This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
He brought back!
You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you. You'd be like heaven to touch. I wanna hold you so much. At long last, love has arrived, and I thank God I'm alive. You're just too good to be true. Can't take my eyes off of you.
BFM 89.9, it is 7:38. Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Chui Lin, and along with Sharmila Ganesan, we're calling in from home. In the studio is Arvin Yuvaraj. And you just heard there, Heath Ledger's defining role, fight me, I don't care. today we are talking about teen movies, which is why we wanted to start with one of, I think, the best of the genre, and that is, of course, 10 Things I Hate About You.
Hey, I would agree defining roles, yeah, because I mean, I think that's the great thing about teen movies. A lot of actors that you don't realize did these teen movies or teen comedies actually had their start in that genre. I mean, this movie also had Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it.
Yes.
I mean, we're talking about The Dark Knight, right? The definitive teen movie where Heath Ledger played the definitive teenager. I think, you know, like Hollywood likes to focus on stuff like drama and love and romance and all sorts of craziness. I don't think there's any other genre, you know, that gives you that much and that you can capitalize on to that extent more than teen movies.
Yeah, so I think we should kind of lay out the ground for what we're talking about. And also, I have some thoughts as to why I think teen movies are so abiding. And a lot of that, I think, is in line with what you just said, Arvin. But when we say teen movies, I think we're talking about a movie where it is of the utmost importance that the characters are teenagers. Because the truth is that there are a lot of movies that might be set in high school or that might, you know, have young characters, but it's not that important that the characters are quote-unquote teenagers going through teenage dramas. So while we are going to, I think, in this show talk about things like musicals, like horror movies, like just all sorts of things, the main focus is going to be on the fact that it is actually of utmost importance that the characters are teenagers going through typical teenage stuff.
I think the words coming of age matters a lot when we talk about teen movies, and no matter what genre they may sort of mold this theme around, whether it's comedy or horror or love, at the end of the day, it's about a sort of a definitive turning point for young people who start not knowing a particular thing about themselves and by the end have changed somehow fundamentally. And I think that's something that we see being played out in teen movies over and over again, even though the story frame around them might change.
Yeah, I mean, it's a template that they've used for other movies as well, because I wanted to ask you guys, is Spider-Man a teen movie?
Or yes,
is it is,
I think,
right?
So.
Yeah, especially the new ones are very teen movies, sort of like wrapped in a superhero, foil. And then Harry Potter is a teen movie, kind of. Some of the Harry Potter films are teen movies. Some Disney films like Brave or Frozen are also teen movies, like coming-of-age stories that are wrapped in, like, you know, the Disney-ness of it all. So they have used the template in other movies without calling it a pure teenage film, but it still uses those same beats, right?
I think that's really interesting, because sometimes I think what happens is that the teen movie tag can be limiting in some sense, especially post like 90s, early 2000s, when suddenly it became really associated with a particular kind of film. And so it often suits like a superhero film to not market itself as a teen movie, because then it'll lose out on the adults. But yeah, essentially at their heart, they're not telling a story that's very different from a 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yeah, and I do think also that along with the things that we're talking about, there are certain story beats and generic conventions that come with teen movies that make them singularly defining. There's usually a school dance or a prom, preferably a prom. There will be probably at some point a sleepover, or there's going to be teens kind of spread out on bunk beds, or, you know, lying on beds, belly forward, face cupped in hands, talking about whatever it is that they're bothered by. And again, you know, if you kind of take that across the genres, you will generally have that. And I think that A, it's those things that make a teen movie recognizable. But also, I did want to say that, to your point, Sharmila, about losing out on adults, it's a weird one, isn't it? Because the movies that we watch as teenagers, we tend to be able to rewatch, broadly speaking. You know, they kind of, I think it's just like the music that we listen to when we're young. It tends to become the soundtrack of our lives. And so, yeah, I think that while there is the risk of missing out on people who are already adults, a lot of people do grow older with the movies that they loved when they were teenagers.
It also has like some of the strongest arcs, right? I mean, teen movies, they're never, I wouldn't say they're never the same, but normally they become different people by the end of the movie. That's the whole point of a teenage film, because there's so much change. It's always about change or aging or leaving something behind. Most of the characters in teen movies would have learned something significant by the end of that movie. I know it's the same for a lot of other films as well. But for some reason, it's more potent or more substantial or more significant in teen movies. Maybe because it is at the core of the story itself.
I also wanted to add to sort of the check marks of the genre that Lynn just said, the either the complete absence of adult figures, or most of the adult figures that are present tend to either be you have one sort of great adult who understands them, or in the opposition of it, you have the one really awful adult that makes everyone's life difficult. And I think that's something that even in Spider-Man, I mean, you might have your Auntie May, but she's rarely present. She's there and she's loving, but she's not always really there. And I think that's something that kind of has to happen so that you can put your young characters at the forefront, because otherwise parents are going to be like, what are you doing traipsing about in the city in the middle of the night?
Yeah, so I think we've laid out the groundwork for what we're going to be discussing today. And we're definitely going to get into why these movies are so abiding. Generally speaking, because they deal in huge arcs of drama, I think is the broad answer. But we're going to get into some examples of good ones after this. We would love to hear from you, though. What were the movies that you watched when you were a teenager? And also, what are some teenage movies that you love? I think when we were trying to talk about this show today, we came up with things like Grease. There were so many that we didn't manage to fit in all of the John Hughes. Let us know what some of your favorites are. You can call us at 7733-2900. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. And of course, also tweet us at BFM Radio. You're listening to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Best flipping moments. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Oh, be honest, Andy. If Brian came walking up to you in the hall on Monday, what would you do? I mean, picture this, you're there with all the sports. I know exactly what you'd do. You'd say hi to him, and when he left, you'd cut him all up so your friends wouldn't think that you really liked him.
No way.
Okay. What if I came up to you?
Same exact thing.
You are a bitch!
Why? Because I'm telling the truth? That makes me a bitch.
No, because you know how shitty that is to do to someone. And you don't got the balls to stand up to your friends and tell them that you're going to like who you want to like.
Okay, what about you, you hypocrite? Why don't you take Allison to one of your heavy metal vomit parties? Or take Brian out to the parking lot at lunch and get higher? What about Andy, for that matter? What about me? What would your friends say if we were walking down the hall together?
BFM 89.9, it's 7:46, and you are listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Sharmila. And we're talking today about teen movies. In case you couldn't tell from what about me, which is the defining cry, I think, of many a teenage film. And you just heard there a little bit of Breakfast Club.
Oh, it's been a heavy John Hughes week for me because we did Ferris Bueller for our throwback. I also decided I would watch Breakfast Club. And it really reminded me of how some things just don't change. So much of Breakfast Club, you know, the conversation that we've been having in the last couple of years, the boomer versus the zennials, literally that conversation happens in the Breakfast Club where the principal talks about how he can't believe this world is going to go to these kids. And someone tells him, well, what would you have thought of them when you were 16, of yourselves if you were 16? And I'm just like, maybe that's why teen movies resonate and continue to resonate, because all of us can remember being young and all of us can also remember, like Arvind brought up in our show, now being on the side of the adults.
What it feels like, yeah. But also, yeah, just listening to that clip kind of reminded me of how different teen movies used to be in the 80s and how different they are now. Because I think nowadays it's slightly safer, or they play it slightly more innocent, or they go for different angles. Whereas The Breakfast Club, it was just completely unleashed. And that is what teenagers are like. It was more truthful to the teenage experience and what their lives are like, and the things they say and the way they speak, which is kind of sugar-coated nowadays. Because if they are going to do something like that, then it's made like a drama. Or if it's a rated R thing, then it's like a prestige project. But there are very little casual teen movies that also tread that line of being vulgar and being open and being sort of controversial, when still being innocent teenage flicks.
I think it's about being true to a period of experimentation in many of our own lives, right? Because that's what being teenage means. It means to stretch the boundaries, to feel all the feelings, and also to be trying to figure out, I think, in many ways, how you should behave, how you should react, and if you were to do something like this, what's going to happen then? And it's that sort of feedback to the world that John Hughes movies, I think, really captured, that feeling of simultaneously being very lost and also incredibly full of potential, and resenting that potential a little bit, resenting the fact that you have the rest of your life ahead to live. And it is like you, and I think also this is something that we addressed in the Ferris Bueller episode. I think in the 80s, in the era of Gordon Gekko and Greed is Good, it's particularly less tempting, I would say, for teenagers to want to start working. You know, it's more likely that you would want to stay in high school than you would want to like leap into corporate America.
I'm actually reminded of, even further back, of how, I suppose in many ways, the origin of that teenage angst genre with things like Marlon Brando in The Wild One, or James Dean in Rebel Without a Cause, where that same thing that you talked about, Arvind, that sense of something being unleashed, something being uncontrolled, it's actually a force that those movies do so well. And yes, it's largely been tempered as we've come to present day, mostly because they want these movies to be watched by young people, I think. And then you have ratings and so on. So those kind of movies these days tend to be the prestige projects and might be teen movies in some way, but in other ways, they're not, because teenagers can't technically watch them.
Yeah, but the one thing that I love from new movies, and, you know, as much as I love teen movies from the 80s, I'm so glad that the habit of casting 30-year-olds to play teenagers has sort of died down, because at least now the teenagers are sort of scrawny and small-looking, and they look like teenagers, like boys and girls in school. Whereas back then, you'd have like full-grown adults trying to pretend to be teenagers, and you can see the, you know, the close-up shots, you get to see like the eye bags and the wrinkles and stuff, and I'm like, look, you've got a house and like bills to pay, and I can see it in your adult eyes, and you're pretending to be like a teenager. So that's one of the things, one of the staples from the movies in the 80s that I'm glad is sort of like, has been sort of diluted over the years.
This is what unionizing does. They had to cast adults because they had hours to limit.
Yep.
I was thinking about how we spoke about Babysitter's Club yesterday. And so in that same vein, increasingly we are seeing age-appropriate actors and actresses kind of take the roles that are meant for them, I think, which is quite a lovely thing. So we do have a message here from Douche, who has a list of things, all kind of very much in my sweet spot in terms of era. So it's a list. I'm just going to read it out. It's Can't Hardly Wait, which All That. Casper, which is maybe more of a preteen movie, but hello, Devon Sawa. Cruel Intentions, Jawbreaker, Camp Nowhere, which I think is a pretty definitive, a nice bunch of movies.
I also think, Dina, now that you mentioned Devon Sawa, I'm thinking about how one of the big things with the teen movie is the teen heartthrob, and how most of the movies that we've talked about, including James Dean and Marlon Brando, all spawned the definitive pinup boys and girls. And I think that's another thing about that genre of movie, because it kind of hits you at that time in life when you're not ashamed to say, I am so in love with someone. And that's one of the pleasures of that genre, I think.
Yeah, which is also something that has kind of been diluted, I think. You don't get a lot of...
Zac Efron had his day, okay.
But that's the thing. So Zac Efron himself, I mean, his day is like, what, 15 years ago?
Oh, you're 15
to 18 years ago. You know, which is another one of those tropes that has sort of gone away with the times. But yeah, another good staple of teen movies.
I also love the mentions here of, firstly, She's All That often gets overshadowed by 10 Things I Hate About You, but I will always love it. However, Cruel Intentions and Jawbreaker in particular are two standouts from that, simply because it explores nastiness in a way that I really appreciate. Because if you compare the clean-cut nature of what we think teen movies look like or ought to look like, then... to contrast that against Cruel Intentions, where you have a bunch of manipulative rich kids essentially trying to shape someone else's life, and Jawbreaker, which is fundamentally about female bullying. I think, you know, being able to explore those themes unapologetically in the teen movie form with all its big feelings is part of what makes the payoff so great.
Oh, absolutely. I was a teenager when Cruel Intentions came out, and I remember just being mind blown by it. You know, it so fit into, it felt like such a cool movie being that age, and you feel so adult watching it. And I actually didn't realize it was based on Dangerous Liaisons. It was my entryway into something like that. So absolutely, I think that there's so much versatility within the genre that we don't realize, possibly because we may not have been watching them when they came out.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much you can get away with. There's so much you can get the characters to say and do that you... It's kind of weird because you don't have to hold them accountable for the things they say and do, because they are teenagers in the movie. So you get so much of flexibility with that. So you can write them in certain ways. You can write them as just pure garbage at the beginning of the film. And then by the end of it, they can change to become some of the most lovable characters. And that's... I think that's something you can only do with teenagers, because it's easy to forgive them as teenagers. So it's a very different kind of movie, and I think writers get a lot of leeway in these movies to write like super interesting characters that are like fluid and flexible and have a lot of room to explore within the 1.5 or 2 hours or whatever they have.
So again, if you'd like to tell us what your favorite teen movies are, something that you enjoyed watching when you were a teenager, or something that, you know, still features these teenage tropes, right? High school, prom, etc. Can be anything. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. I did want to touch on something, which is, do you guys think that teen movies are among America's best soft power exports?
I was thinking this when we were discussing what movies to talk about and what clips to play, and how by and large, all the ones I can think of are American, and they're a very particular kind of American as well. It's that, you know, corn-fed, healthy, blonde, suburban, small-town America story. And that's what I grew up with. So yes, I completely agree.
Yeah, I mean, there are so many movies that I sort of assumed or imagined that I could relate to or relate with that I honestly couldn't, because none of us went to school like that. But, you know, there were so many things that happened that they became staples of me growing up and watching those movies. So for some reason, I thought I had certain experiences just by watching those movies, but I never did. So yeah, I think they are. They definitely are.
Yeah, and you know, I was thinking about it, right? These movies are kind of a dime a dozen in the sense that they every year you see a whole slew of them because, like we've established, there's just this whole thing about there's something incredibly appealing about watching young people behave in ways that as adults we don't allow ourselves to anymore. But I think that, and I was mulling it over, like what sets a good movie, a good teen movie apart? And I think that generally speaking, it has to do, like with anything else, with a really intelligent script and where you don't talk down to, I really hate it when teen movies appear to be talking down to teenagers, because then what's the point?
I think the one thing you mentioned earlier in the show, a sense of nostalgia when you watch it as an adult is also really important, because there's some that when I revisit, I feel are genuinely not great. But then there's some like 10 Things I Hate About You or John Hughes.
Or Mean Girls.
Or Mean Girls or Clueless, which I rewatch now and I realize these were really well-written films.
Yeah. So that's the other thing. I mean, they don't write them as kids or like dumb kids. Not all of them. Some of them definitely do. But I think because even the people writing them are kind of nostalgic and they kind of remember what it was like growing up, they write these films as very significant movies because I think it matters to them as well how they tell the story. And obviously, they are in the movies as well, quote unquote. So I think, you know, when you compare it to like kids movies, where sometimes it's just surface level, teen movies always have a sort of depth to them.
Yeah, and I think it's a mixture of being able to do extreme things with the story but have the safety net of age and school and so there's impact but it's not like, you know, people don't die. So we are talking today about our favorite teen movies or at least movies that are good examples of the genre. We'd love to hear from you. I think we've got some messages which we'll get to after the 8 o'clock news. Keep them coming. You can call us at 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio. You are listening tonight to Popcorn Culture on BFM 89.9.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. What comes to mind?
Halloween. You know, the one with the guy in the white mask who walks around and stalks babysitters? What's yours?
Guess.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Is that the one where the guy had knives for fingers?
Yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Freddy, that's right. I like that movie. It was scary.
Well, the first one was, but the rest sucked.
So, you got a boyfriend?
Why? You want to ask me out on a date?
Maybe. You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
Because I want to know who I'm looking at.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:07, and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin, and Charmila. Tonight, we're talking about teen movies in all their gloriousness and all their forms, which is why we just heard a little bit of, I think, one of the quintessential slasher teen flicks, and that is Scream. And Scream, I think, was kind of the predecessor of so many things that came after. I Know What You Did Last Summer, I Know What You Did Last Summer ad nauseum, and so on
and
so
then
forth.
All the scary movies, which were exactly. Just parodies of that. Oh my God, I realize how much older I've gotten in that now I'm listening to it and I'm just like, we're a kid. Who is this creepy old man calling her? And I think that kind of encapsulates why it works so well when you have teenagers in horror movies, because on the one hand, they're kind of adult enough to do things that, you know, kind of go out of the house alone or be left alone at home.
Or make bad decisions.
Make bad decisions. But on the other hand, they're just children. And Drew Barrymore sounds like such a child on the phone that my heart, like, honestly, I was clutching myself listening to it. And I think that's why horror movies with teens in them work so well.
I mean, aren't slasher films like teen movies by default? Aren't all slasher films?
Yeah.
Friday the 13th, all the Nightmare on Elm Street, all the stuff. I'm going to get to a couple of messages. We have a bunch of WhatsApps and stuff on Twitter. So on WhatsApp from Jane Lee, she says Dead Poets Society, which is, Yeah,
oh,
I think it's a yeah, good teen movie. Kamarun says, love Winona Ryder's Reality Bites. Nice soundtrack. It's like first crush forever. That's a good movie.
Yes. Oh, I forgot how definitive Winona was at that age.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I have a question. Is Reality Bites a teen movie? Is it more a young adult movie? Because I'm not debating the fact that in structure and in terms of how the characters behave, they are super teenage. But in terms of actual age, are they teenagers? I mean,
I feel like I've gotten so much older that they seem like teenagers to me now.
Yeah.
But also, just in general, great movie.
Yeah.
Yes. We have one from Life. Life says, movie snob mode on. Y tu mama también, teenagers, check. Ooh. Coming of age, check. Sleepover, kind of, I suppose. Perhaps a teen movie for adults, movie snob mode off.
Fair enough. I mean, I think that at some point we had to go movie snob, so I'm glad that someone did it for us. And I think that's a great example of how teen movies can encompass so many different types of films.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I think we talked about it off screen, off air, sorry, Lady Bird, for instance.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Also movie snob mode on, but also very much teen movie.
Good teen movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have a tweet from Shongen who says, I always thought that Bring It On was super deep for its time, especially for a teen movie. It touched on poverty, race and social class and all wrapped under awesome sing-along cheers that I can recite till today. And then Ryan asks, is Stand By Me considered a teen movie? Which is exactly what I asked when we were prepping for the show.
As a Stand By Me purist, it is not a teen movie. I'm sorry. I know that it involves a lot of the tropes we're talking about, but I think it's important to the story that they are kids, that actually they're a bunch of kids going on their last big childhood adventure before they have to enter the more dangerous waters of teenagehood. So, God, I sound like the horrible person going, Reality Bites isn't, Stand By Me isn't. But I think they might not count.
I mean, if there was like a spin-off of Stand By Me from the point of view of the bullies, then it would be a teen movie because I think they were teenagers. But Stand By Me in itself is a kids movie. I mean, they're all kids. They're all below the age of 13.
Yeah. Well, by that, I'm just thinking of something like Stranger Things. It does a lot of the teen movie beats, but they're kind of on the brink of teenagehood. They're not really teenagers. So I don't know. I don't know. Like, I feel like I would think of Stranger Things when I think teenagers, but then I need to take a step back and realize, oh, wait, they're not.
I mean, if we want to go that way, I think there are tons of like good teen movie, quote unquote, shows that are not actually movies, but follow that template on, you know, streaming services and stuff. A lot of them sort of borrow that template from movies of the 80s and 90s and then stretch them across like, you know, a few seasons and tell those stories. And it's really good because it just shows and it proves that if you can use that story well, then you have enough juice to last you at least three seasons. There's a good arc there. And you don't have to cram it in to, you know, a couple of hours at most, or at least.
Can I just leap in to say that on the subject of Bring It On, that's such a good movie.
I love Bring It On. I'm so glad you said it.
Bring It On is genuinely such a great film. I also can recite the cheers beat for beat. And it was really formative when I was younger. And I think that it's a few different things, right? So a rewarding movie experience is one where you can revisit it over and over again, simply sometimes due to pure entertainment, but other times because it does explore themes like what it's like to be an outsider. And I think in teenage movies, that notion of the outsider, that notion of what it means to finally break into the herd, so to speak, the gang, it's so important. That's the lifeblood of so many great teen movies, and Bring It On really does that. 10 Things I Hate About You really does that. And Mean Girls also does that, although maybe in a more anthropological way, but you know, still it counts.
I think what you just said, this idea of rewatching, not rewatching as an adult, but even as a teenager, to want to revisit a particular film and again, is one of those things that elevates a great teen movie from an average one. Because when I think of things like 10 Things or Clueless or Mean Girls, I remember how often I rewatch them. I know lines of dialogue word for word. I know scenes word for word. But I don't get tired of them because there's something about at the heart of it, at the core of it, that feels like it's lived experience.
I wanted to ask you guys, do you ever want to see what happens after a teen movie? Because teen movies are very much like Disney movies, and the fact that after they get married, you really don't care, or you don't want to care. So do you ever wonder like what happens to these people after the movie ends? Like we spoke about, what would Ferris do after he leaves school, right? Like what kind of career would he go after? What kind of a person would he grow up to be?
A con man.
Yeah. Are you ever interested to see that stuff, or do you just not want to know, because they work so well as teenagers that you don't want to see them as 35-year-olds or 40-year-olds or 45-year-olds?
And often they end, I mean, maybe not the horror ones or something like Donnie Darko, but they often end on such great hopeful notes. I mean, I just watched Breakfast Club and Judd Nelson holding his arm up at the end, you know. You don't want to know what happens. You don't want to know what happens when they go back to school on Monday. It's enough that that story ended with so much hope.
You just put him in a perpetual freeze frame for the yes. rest of his life and curse him to that existence.
You're really in a mood this week.
Yeah, it's a full-on adult mode.
Yeah, it's uncle railing his fist at the world mode.
The get off my lawn.
Adulting is great. Yeah, get lost, teenagers. I recently rewatched Grease, which falls into that category of what you were describing earlier, Ivan, the full-on eye bags and that you guys are 45. You know, let's not pretend. But it also does the other thing of ending on a really beautiful note, right? Like that famous last song, "We Go Together," and then just riding off into the, flying off, in fact, into the sunset. And I have to say, just as a sidebar to your question, watching it was a really bittersweet experience because so many of them, so the actors have stayed famous and so many of them have gone through personal trauma. And you know that, you know? So for example, Jeff Conaway, who plays Kaneki, passed away, I think, of a drug overdose fairly recently. Olivia Newton-John has had her bouts of illness. And so not to be a downer,
John Travolta has just gone off the rails.
Yes. No, and also recently, in fact, lost his wife like in the last week. So
I think that's right.
Rewatching it actually is a very strange experience. So in answer to your question, no, I'm happy with the Judd Nelson freeze frame because I think the beauty of teen movies is that they often end, it's that idea of potential. It could go anywhere. They could do anything. I don't need to see them as older Marty McFly, you know?
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah, you know, as that example. Yep. I don't need that.
I mean, that's why they work, right? That's what they're supposed to teach us. Like, even when we watch teen movies, we're supposed to look back and go like, oh, you know, these are the kinds of things that they could have done, or these are the kinds of things that you can do at that age. And they're supposed to at least inspire, I think. That's one of the other things at the core of like every teen movie, no matter how it turns out at the end. There's some sort of inspiration that you can draw from it because they're so young and, you know, like you said, there's so much potential from those movies. So I ask because I never want to, but I know that I can't think of what movie now, but there have been a bunch of sequels that studios have come up with saying that we're going to show you the continuation of this movie and they're going to make cameos in that movie. And I'm like, I don't want to see any of that. I don't want to see any of these people grow up to, you know, have loans and pay bills and stuff. It's not as fun as watching them in that period of their life. It's just nice seeing them in that box, I guess.
It's not lost on me that we played the Joker clip from Dark Knight just a couple of weeks ago, and then today we played Heath Ledger singing that song. And I was really sad listening to it because in some ways, actually, it makes me feel happier to remember him as Patrick Verona from 10 Things than it does to remember him as the Joker.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get that. Why are we suddenly so sad, guys? We're talking about teen movies. It's supposed to be a light episode.
It's that part of the teen movie where it's the downer before it gets back up again.
Now we're all, you know, in a circle sort of soul searching and you know, yeah, that's where we are.
Mm-hmm. It's the crisis. Next up, we go to prom. All right, so we started this particular segment with a clip from Scream. And now for a complete contrast, but also kind of dealing in the idea that teen movies can play with different genres while still remaining essentially teenage at heart. We're going to finish on a clip from another film. In the meantime, let us know your thoughts. What are your favorite movies featuring teenagers or, you know, having that teenage quality to them? any that you remember watching as a teenager in particular, call us and let us know, 7733-2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899, and tweet us at BFM Radio.
You're impossibly fast and strong. Your skin is pale white and ice cold. Your eyes change color. And sometimes you speak like you're from a different time. You never eat or drink anything. You don't go out in the sunlight. How old are you?
17.
How long have you been 17?
A while.
I know what you are.
Say it. Out loud. Say it.
Vampire.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Here and now, it's time for celebration. I finally figured out. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That all our dreams have no limitations. That's what it's all about.
Come on now.
Everyone is special in their own way. We make each other strong.
Each other strong.
We're not the same. We're different.
BFM 89.9, it is 8:23 and you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Arvin and Sharmila. I apologize, guys. While looking for that clip, I really wanted to get to the Wildcats rap and I just couldn't find it. I'm sorry.
That's because you're going to do it, aren't you?
I was really tempted.
Gosh, you know, High School Musical reminds me that that was the point when I realized I was well past my teenage years. When it came out, I was like, nope, there's a point at which you stop identifying with new teen movies. And that was it for me.
I can't believe we played Twilight and then High School Musical back to back. It's just way too much. It's such an overload of... I don't know.
Somewhere my producer, Suanne, is waiting to cut you. Because she loves Twilight.
I'm sure.
Can I just say, though, I mean, we might gently mock High School Musical, perhaps, but I really wanted to play that song because of the lyrics, because I think that it captures so much of what it means to be a teenager and knowing that you have just a little bit of high school left, basically that Ferris Bueller age, except sanitized, because it's we're all the same. We're different in our own way. We're
it's
all
Disney
in this together.
They cannot be like full John Hughes.
That's true. But the whole we're going to make our dreams come true, I think for many of, you know, for many of the kids in the 90s raised on Lizzie McGuire and then later on High School Musical, that was a rallying cry for so many people.
I want to say, if anyone wants to check this out, there is a clip on YouTube, an SNL clip, fans of High School Musical. Go look it up. It's Zac Efron. He goes to another school. He gets sent to another school and he starts singing. And they're like, we don't do that here. Like, what are you doing? And no one starts singing with him. And then he realizes that his school was the only one in the district that did that or that actually sang, which is a really, really good clip. And it's also really, it's a really sobering clip, I think, for him as the lead character in that movie.
They weren't all in it together.
I mean, High School Musical really was quite definitive, wasn't it? Because it sort of set the stage for Glee, which was this sort of huge, TV juggernaut. And it also paved the way for a lot of the normalizing of musicals as TV shows, which wasn't something that really existed when I was a teenager.
There are a couple of WhatsApps that just came in. So this comes from what is from one who says that Perks of Being a Wallflower is my favorite teen movie, which the author of the book also was heavily involved in the movie. He also names a couple of newer coming of age films like The Diary of a Teenage Girl and Me and Earl and the Dying Girl and Boyhood. I think Boyhood's a life movie, not so much a teen movie. It's like from start to adulthood.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I did think of Boyhood when we were talking about this in the same way that we considered something that I suppose is a little more highbrow, like Lady Bird. Mm. And I agree, while a significant chunk of Boyhood takes place in his teenage years, because after all, we are checking in with him year on year, I do think his childhood and the growing up part is as important.
Yeah.
I thought the same way about Moonlight, because initially I was going to say Moonlight is one of those prestige teenage films, but not really, right? Because it's both about childhood as well as early adulthood.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Devan says, growing up in the early 2000s where there was no streaming and movies are limited to what we get on Astro, I remember when one of us in the gang got the American Pie DVD, remembering how cool it would be to tell people that we watched it. And he goes, the teenage years are the best. And then we have another one from Min. Min says, Prayers for Bobby. Has anyone watched that? Is that considered a teen movie? I've never heard of Prayers for Bobby. I've never watched. I haven't seen it.
Neither have I.
Yeah.
Please let us know what that is.
Hmm. Yeah, thank you for the recommendation. I haven't actually seen that.
Yeah.
Sorry, what did we get to before Prayers for Bobby?
American Pie.
American Pie.
Yeah.
So while we were looking for clips today to play and tantalize and horrify you, American Pie is unplayable, guys. There's mm-hmm. just nothing in that movie that can be played on air and have us remain on air. And I think that is testament to earlier, Arvin, you were talking about how John Hughes movies pushed boundaries in that way, but did it in a safe way. And I think American Pie, in its own right, did the same thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's exactly what Devan said. I also was, you know, maybe late teens when American Pie came out. And there was this sense of, it was the DVD you hid from your parents and passed around quietly, you know, with your friends. Because even if they showed it on Astro, it'd be censored or, you know. And I think it's exactly that. It's all the dirty things about being a teenager that you think and probably talk about with your friends, but don't let the adults cotton on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's something quite exhilarating about having movies that do that. Superbad as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Superbad also, for sure.
Yes, I agree. And I think
boys, no? Because it's a very boy-oriented film, young men.
Superbad? Yeah.
Superbad, American Pie,
American
for that
Pie.
Matter. A lot of it has to do with like sort of that inner world of young men.
Yeah, very true.
Well, I did want to say before we kept going, mm. I think the beauty of teen movies is also that they validate feelings because they're showcasing how stories can play out. They're also saying that this story is important enough to make a film about. And sure, I mean, in some cases, it's just, oh, nobody's asked me to prom. Am I going to ever get a date? But in other cases, it's also really serious stuff, you know, things about how you deal with your family, things about whether or not you feel brave enough to pursue your dreams. And I think that when you are at an age where insecurity is the name of the game, that it's quite a beautiful thing to have movies validate you, which is why it's an important thing, I think, also to not just dismiss teen movies as frippery. I mean, they are. That's part of what makes them great. But they also explore things that matter.
Yeah. This is what we spoke about on Babysitter's Club. You know, you don't just like dismiss people's like the problems of people, even though they are much younger than you, as being like unimportant or insignificant just because they are in that age. Right. There's another message from IP and he says Karate Kid. Isn't there a series now with them older? And I think, yeah, there's something on YouTube. There's a series on YouTube where they're like adults now and they have their own dojos and stuff. But Karate Kid's a good recommendation. And another one from Adli, who says also Dead Poets Society.
Oh, you know, until two people so far have mentioned Dead Poets Society, I must say I never thought of it as a teen film. But it would
I thought of it as a teacher's movie.
Yes, mm. a teacher's movie. But I suppose it could be both.
Having seen a little bit of it recently, I think that it is absolutely a teen movie. It's the polar opposite of American Pie and Superbad, but it is also about the concerns of young men, about, you know, boys who are trying to figure themselves out, who maybe just want to be in a play. Why can't their cruel fathers leave them alone? Mm-hmm. So yeah, Dead Poets Society definitely qualifies.
But on that note about feeling heard or feeling acknowledged, I do think that actually, especially when you're a teenager, when you're a child, it's hugely empowering to watch these things on screen. For me, it was a lot more TV shows. I remember shows like Clarissa Explains It All or Blossom or Moesha. I don't know whether there are people listening to this who are just like, what are these things? But they allowed me to watch and realize that it's okay to feel the feelings I felt and that it's okay to talk about them. And even if the people in your life may not necessarily make you feel like you were included, that somewhere there were people who were like you. And I think that's a big thing at that age.
How dare you imply that there are people who don't know about Clarissa? How dare you? But I will say that, for example, as somebody who was always very conflict averse and continues to be actually, watching friendship blow-ups play out in teen movies and teen TV shows, watching the way people fight and came back together was, I think, important for me. You know, it made me realize that, yes, you might feel uncomfortable watching two best friends disagree about something, but also being able to watch them resolve it. Just very quickly, we do have Douche returning to say, the OC, I know it's TV, but I don't care.
The OC is so teen, mm-hmm. and we completely really didn't address TV, but TV is such a huge space for teenage stories.
Dawson's Creek,
Dawson's Creek, Beverly yep. Hills, The OC, even Buffy. You know, while its genre is sort of definitively teenage high school, and they are a huge influence on many people.
One Tree Hill.
Yeah.
Oh my
just
gosh.
Want to say, yeah. So that's the thing I wanted to ask, right? Are teen movies made for teens or are they made for adults to feel nostalgic, or is it both? Because all of these movies are written by people who are already adults. They're not written by teenagers. And they're drawing inspiration from memory. They're drawing inspiration from teenhood. They might remember it differently than it actually happened. And they're feeling nostalgic themselves. They're doing it for that experience, right? So who is it engineered or designed for? Like, do teens watch teen movies and feel the same way? Or do adults watch teen movies and feel differently? So I haven't been able to sort of like decide, because I know that I watched movies with teenagers growing up, but it hits different or it feels different when you watch it as an adult and there are teenagers in there, because you remember teenagehood in a different way.
I think the best ones, and this might be a bit of a cop-out answer, but I really do think that the best ones do both. I think they respect their audience, and the characters that they're featuring do not talk down to them or do not dumb them down. But at the same time, with an awareness that you also want an adult to watch this and not feel like this couldn't really happen, and not think that it's completely superficial. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I watch a good teen movie for the same reason that I watch romance or action or thriller, because they're all big things. You know, in each of those movies, you can expect adrenaline or tension or that feeling of catharsis that comes from incredibly big themes or big situations being explored in dramatic ways. And yes, they're very different types of films, but I watch them for the same reason. So when it comes to teen movies, more often than not, I'm looking to tap into, and I suppose give myself permission to not be an adult for 2 hours, you know, to be able to watch it and go, yeah, that's right, chase after her, you know, as opposed to just stay home and pay your taxes.
We have one more message that just came in. The Karate Kid serial is Cobra Kai. Quite good. Yes,
oh,
Cobra Kai is the show. Yep.
Also, one more message from Sarah, who says, this is an odd one, but does Whisper of the Heart count as a teen movie or from Up on Poppy Hill?
Oh.
I think animes certainly do. Yeah. Actually, I think that a lot of Studio Ghibli movies are very sensitive teen movies in many ways. I was just thinking whether Princess Mononoke is considered a teenager, and I think she might
even be. Howl is a teenager. Yeah. Have you guys tried watching new teen movies, and can you watch them?
It depends. Stuff like Lady Bird's okay. Stuff like Lady Bird's easy to. It's more accessible, I feel. But otherwise, I don't know. I think I've kind of reduced my consumption of teen movies of late. They're not the thing that I choose if I'm choosing or deciding to watch a movie. But I still can. I mean, going back to shows, there are a lot of teen based shows that I still watch on Netflix or Apple or whatever. So yeah, I think I still can. It's about. I think once you've passed a certain age, you can always remember what it is like to be in that age. So it's easy to relate. So yeah, definitely. I still can.
I really liked To All the Boys I've Loved Before. So I didn't feel so so caught up in it that I needed to watch the sequel, which I know has already come out and everybody was making a really huge deal about it, about Lara Jean and, you know, where she goes with that. But I have not actually seen that. I think something like The Hate U Give, which is also a teen movie, is something that I find really easy to watch and latch onto. So I don't think that I'm entirely done with teen movies. I am done with teen movies like American Pie. I don't think I have the space for that in my life anymore. But things like Easy A, for example, I still watched, enjoyed, loved. So definitely still room in my life for it.
I think the Babysitters Club recently convinced me that I could still do it and not roll my eyes. Mm-hmm. So there's hope for me yet.
On that cheerful adult note, we've been talking today about teen movies and sounding, I think, both very... very teenage and very old all at once. If you would like to keep those thoughts coming, you can continue to WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. And for that matter, if you would like to reach us outside of the show, you can find us at movies@bfm.my. That's our email address. And we are BFM Popcorn on both Twitter and Instagram. And that's it. You've been listening today to Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.